You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Wildcard game two, instant reaction. Rays lose 1-0 on an Oscar Gonzalez solo home run in the bottom of the 15th inning. Guardians win the series 2-0. They advance to the ALDS to play the Yankees, and the Rays season is over. It was a beautiful day for the Rays pitching staff, giving up just the one run, working into the 15th, but a horrendous day for the Rays offense facing Tristan McKenzie and a bunch of other Cleveland relievers. And just like that, the season is over. Ben, just focusing on, we can go big picture in a little bit, but just focusing on this game as a whole, I don't know. To me, it felt like there were no adjustments at the plate. There was zero plate discipline. And that's something that even when the Rays have had a down year offensively, they've been, you know, that's something they can usually hang their hat on is good plate discipline. But what were your thoughts, Ben, on the offensive output or lack thereof?
So I know, like, you know, Chad Matola, I was listening to his interview with Solons the other day, like the postseason preview interview, whatever. And he was talking about how, you know, you don't want to tell the guys to do too much because then it's, you got so many things going around in your head. You don't want to tell them, oh, you have to do this with your swing or you have to do this and all that stuff. So I understand, you know, not wanting to mess with their heads too much, but I was kind of hoping the players would kind of make their own adjustments, but it didn't really look like they did. I mean, the Guardians have a great pitching staff, don't get me wrong, but yeah, I don't know. It's pretty unfortunate, though.
It was. There were some chances late, I think particularly getting runners on the corners with less than two outs and then not cashing in on that. You had Wander Franco get out on the bases, right? I think he made the right move trying to hold up Oscar Jimenez, who was attempting to turn a double play, but then not being able to get into second base safely, which was disappointing. Brian, I want to get your take on this too. Obviously disappointing, but how are you feeling right now?
I wish I had more good things to say. I don't have a ton. I mean, really just echoing what you guys were saying. I just think there were no plate discipline. I'm looking at the box score right now, you know, and granted this was a, you know, 15 inning game, but at least two strikeouts from Mejia, Walls, Ramirez, Arozarena, Diaz, five strikeouts and six at bats from Jose Siri. It's just a lack of adjustments being made. But again, I don't want to be too doom and gloom. I want to talk about Garrett Clevenger for a second, because oh my goodness. He was absolutely incredible. Coming in, striking out the side, having some emotions in there too. I just wanted to highlight one positive thing that I saw from the game. Garrett Clevenger was absolutely incredible.
I mean, yeah, I think the entire pitching, like everybody who came in, I mean, even Kluber, he gave up the one home run to Oscar Gonzalez. So I think he's a rookie that I've been really into this year. Cole Mitchum talked about him in our preview podcast, how he might have a big impact in this series, and he had the biggest impact of all, the walk-off that clinched the series victory for Cleveland. So, I think this series went – I'm not saying anyone expected this game to go 15 innings, but this series went about the way everyone expected it to. You know, low scoring, really good pitching, some good defense. We saw a lot of good defense on the Cleveland side today. And ultimately, it was going to take one or two big hits. There were three run-scoring events in this two-game series, and they were all home runs. You had two solo shots and then a two-run homer from Jose Ramirez. So it's not like the Guardians tore the cover off the ball. They did what they had to do, and ultimately that was enough to win the game. But I think a lot of credit goes to their pitching staff as well. When you're looking at organizations that are always towards the top in terms of pitching development, the type of staffs they put together. You're looking at the Rays, the Guardians, the Astros, the Dodgers, those types of organizations. And so it's no shock to see that, yeah, we talk a lot about the Rays bullpen and how great they can be, but Cleveland's got just as good, if not a better bullpen. And you saw like Pete Fairbanks today, who I think we probably all penciled in as the Rays' best reliever going into this series, just didn't have it. And whether that was an injury or something else, he didn't have it. So all of the Guardians relievers did. There was no, I think series was the only extra base hit as well. I don't think we had a couple, you know, a few other runners in scoring position. I don't know if we had another double. But ultimately it's like, okay, say you did win this game. Say you brought that run into the top of the 15th and you shut him down in the bottom half. I mean, you're working with Jeffrey Springs and now a more taxed bullpen in game three. You're facing Cal Quantrill, another quality starter. I mean, there's no evidence that the Rays offense was suddenly going to break out of this slump on Sunday, whenever that game would have been played. And beyond that, say you win that game, you think you can match up with the offenses of that, like that of the Blue Jays or the Mariners or the Yankees or the Astros, whoever you face, you know, you face the Yankees in the DS and then whoever you get in the CS. It just didn't feel like this was a team that had enough offensive prowess to make a deep run like we've seen in previous years. So disappointing, but ultimately not surprising. Your best hitter was on the IL, Brandon Lau, who I know fans always talk about how great Brandon Lau is in the postseason, but you know, you look at what Randy Rosarena did, right? What happened in 2020 doesn't equal what happens in future years. So not having Brandon Lau in that lineup hurts. Having David Peralta, who was your big offensive trade deadline acquisition, only had one at-bat in the postseason, that hurts. Whether that's because he was hurt or for another reason, I'm not really sure. I know he had a hip injury, but managerially, either Ben or Brian, were there any decisions in terms of how the bullpen was deployed or how the substitutions were deployed by Kevin Cash today that you guys would not even necessarily criticize, but you think at least are open for discussion?
I thought the pitching change in the ninth inning was a little over managey. I think, who did they bring in? Rayleigh with like two outs. No, sorry. It was Clevinger with two outs in the ninth after Rasmussen was pitching pretty well. I mean, I understand they wanted to get the matchup there, but it just, I don't know. It felt a little over managey to me. It ended up working out because, like I said, I mean, Clevinger was just incredibly dominant with the hitters that he did face. But the pinch hitting for Walls, I thought was strange, unless he was going to lay down a bunt, which I think he attempted the first pitch and then like popped it straight up foul. Ended up striking out.
Let's talk about that Walls attempted bunt, because he did attempt on the first pitch. But if you're going to bring in a guy just to bunt, which is a questionable decision within itself, to only have him attempt and like you get one strike and now the bunt call is off, I thought that was strange because Walls isn't a great hitter to begin with, but you have him down in the count 0-1. It's not like the chances of him reaching base or moving a runner over get any higher. And so that specific, not necessarily the decision to bring Walls in, although I question that, having him only bunt on that first pitch when he fouls it off, like first off, you got to get it down. Like that's on the player. Secondly, to not bunt again on 0-1, felt strange, but yeah, I'm not entirely sure the right move was to pull Paredes out of that game, who in his first two plate appearances looked really good, looked really, really comfortable at the plate.
Yeah, to your point, yeah, I thought the only reason to pinch hit Walls there was to have him bunt, and like you said, I don't know if that's really a great decision either. It's because, you know, the run expectancy of bunting a runner over to second base, you know, it is negligible when it comes to having a runner on first with no outs. So super strange. And then he ended up striking out anyway. So he essentially just did nothing.
Yeah, I was the decisions that I was not confused about, but want to know more about are the not, I don't want to say base running decisions, but like not sending guys, like your offense is struggling. I just felt like they would have sent more runners. Like I know they did steal one base, but there were a couple other opportunities where I feel like they could have been more aggressive trying to take second on a steal. But I mean, it is what it is. Hindsight's 20/20, but I feel like they definitely could have capitalized on that a little bit more.
And the other key moment, and this is just from watching it, but you have runners on the corners with two outs, and Manuel Margot up, and a ball is hit hard down the line. Ramirez does well to field it, but then an amazing throw to get down the line. Josh Naylor has to pick it. There was a question of whether or not he kept his foot on the base. Chris Grieta, the first base coach, was pretty emphatic in saying that his foot was off the base. Clearly, he's in like an emotional, like high intense situation, biased, of course. I thought it was off the base too, but no one would have a better view of that than either Chris Prieto or the first base umpire. They reviewed it, didn't overturn it. But like Manuel Margot, before his injury, easily beats that out. And I don't know if it's going to take some time, or maybe his speed will never return. Like, he's getting to the age where guys typically don't get any faster. You take a pretty serious knee injury that happened this season, and it makes sense that he's not at the same speed that he was. But that's something I'm really used to him beating out. If he beats that out, that's a run. Like, the Rays probably win the game. We don't know how everything else would play out, but it would put, you know, nobody else scored a run until the 15th. So it would have put them in a great situation. And so if you've got Manuel Margot and David Peralta both on your roster, and they're both, you know, if they're both not 100%, in a three-game series, I have a real hard time justifying having them both on that roster. Peralta, we knew, was dealing with a hip injury. He didn't get a single start in the postseason. And I'm sorry, like, I know you hope it gets better by the end of the series, but this is only 3 days long. You have Friday, Saturday, Sunday. If you're not 100% for one or two of those games, you should not be on the roster. I know you probably take a pretty big hit going back to Josh Lowe, but I want healthy players on this roster, especially if you know Manuel Margot probably isn't the same player he was before the injury. It just felt like maybe it was wishful thinking, including Peralta, and hoping that he'd get healthy by Sunday maybe, because I was pretty sure he would start today. I thought him and Paredes were going to come into the lineup, but Paredes did get the start, and Margot was left off the bench. Anything else you guys want to touch on the game? I do want to get to some listener comments and questions here shortly, but Brian and Ben, anything else you guys want to mention?
Yeah, real quick. I did see a tweet. It was by – I can't speak to that particular run of that play in question with Margot, but Homan, who's one of our writers, put out a tweet talking about the decline of Margot's sprint speed over the last few years, and I think he's gone from like the 87th percentile or something like that to like the 65th percentile this year in 2022. So again, I can't speak to that one particular run, but he's essentially, you know, a little bit above average sprint speed at this point.
Right. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. I saw that too. I thought that was interesting. And just a point about the offense here before you go into the comments. They really have like good hitters. Like, this is a good team, and it's just really unfortunate that they got cold when they really didn't need to. So it sucks. They still have good hitters. They're still a good team. I don't think Cash is going anywhere. I know there's been some pretty intense reactions in this past, like, what, like 20 minutes since the game ended, 30 minutes. But yeah, it just sucks. This whole thing sucks right now. So that's my comment.
What I'll say on that is you look at what the moves were made last offseason, and there was a lot of hope that your group of young players, not including Wander Franco, but looking on the position player side at Taylor Walls, Vidal Brujan, and Josh Lowe would all come up at various points in the season. Josh Lowe and Taylor Walls started the year with the big league team and would contribute. They were all highly regarded prospects for different reasons. And honestly, I am pleased with Walls. I think Walls is what he is, and I think he'll be back next year. But Josh Lowe had a very disappointing big league run. Vidal Brujan, I don't want to blame him, because he never got that consistent, like, he never got that really good consistent set of opportunities. He was back and forth between AAA a bunch. He kept hitting really well at AAA, playing really well, and it just never really carried over to the big league level. He did have a hit late in today's game. Stole a base, so I think he stole a base. But it felt like when you have an offseason where you lose Austin Meadows and Joey Wendell, obviously Nelson Cruz, who was kind of an underwhelming acquisition last year, there was just a hope that the rookies and the young players would be good enough to get you there. You did have the acquisition of Isak Paredes, Harold Ramirez, in the regular season, that worked out really, really well. Those guys were good enough to get you to the point where you win 86 games and get to the wild card round. And that's exactly what the front office tells us the goal is every year. They don't say the goal is to win a World Series. They say the goal is to get back to the postseason and have a chance to win the World Series. Well, that's what happened. I don't think any of us should be surprised that this team, they weren't like – obviously, there was the pursuit of Freddie Freeman. Yes, that would be great. It didn't happen. And it didn't happen. And this is the team you put together. This is the team that you trusted to pick up the most wins possible. And it just wasn't good enough. So I think, again, I'm not calling for any rash decisions, not calling for heads to roll. I do think, though, it's time for the front office and the coaching staff to take a long look in the mirror and figure out what needs to change. And it doesn't have to be major changes, but they need to be key changes. And Chad Mottola, again, like, I don't know. I don't exactly know what the role. I don't sit in the clubhouse. I don't, you know, go to BP. It felt like down the stretch, and in these two games specifically, there was no change in approach at the plate when the approach clearly wasn't working. You had guys swinging at breaking balls off the plate, just no plate discipline. So something had to change there, and I'm not sure why it didn't. You've got professional hitters, guys that were just doing the same thing over and over and over again. Francisco Mejia swinging at pitches at his head, swinging at pitches that bounce before the plate. Randy Rosarena's plate discipline, like, he gets trigger happy, it goes downhill quickly for him. Harold Ramirez, it's kind of his game. But when, again, you're in the postseason and these opposing pitching staffs and the pitching coach can really hone in on how to attack each hitter on a roster, you're not in the middle of a 162-game season. Each game means that much more, and they have more time to focus on it. It feels like this Rays lineup was really easy to pick apart. And ultimately, I think there's a reason, that's part of the reason why you played 24 innings in the postseason and you scored one run on a solo home run. So, Brian, Ben, anything else? I've got a pretty big queue up here lining up for people trying to chime in for a bit, but I want to kind of defer to you guys first.
Yeah, I think, like, when it comes to the offense this year, and this may be a hot take, but I think the Rays front office and their willingness to, you know, trade anyone and everyone if the offer is right, really kind of bit them this year with how, you know, mediocre the offense was, to put it charitably. I'm still scratching my head as to why the team felt the need to trade Austin Meadows. I like Isak Paredes, but I think, like, he along the same lines as Ramirez and Mejia and, you know, Siri, it's, you know, all these guys just with, you know, just a lack of approach, and that was just so exploited in these last two games. And, you know, Austin Meadows last year wasn't the same guy as he was in 2019 when he had like a 140, you know, WRC plus. But I think him and maybe a healthy Brandon Lau and even a Joey Wendell, who's like by and large a league average hitter, maybe a shade above. He didn't have a good year this year in Miami, but it adds length to this lineup where it just wasn't there in this postseason. I don't think, like, I didn't see a challenging part of this lineup anywhere in these last two games. I didn't think to myself, oh, these three hitters are coming up. Something's going to happen this inning. I didn't think that at any point.
Yeah. Go ahead, Ben.
Oh, no. I was just going to say, just to piggyback on that, what Brian was saying, I think, you know, I didn't like the front office's approach to, like, selling high on guys, but I think they're going to want to think twice a little bit more going forward, because we've seen that rookies just aren't that good and young players typically aren't that good. So if you're trusting Taylor Walls to take over the Joey Wendell role, you might want to curb your expectations a little bit. So I think we're going to see them be just a little bit more careful, hopefully, in trading away proven talent that, you know, we know what their floor is and you know what you're going to get on a daily basis, where, as opposed to some of the rookies and, you know, young guys, you don't really know. They might go into an 0-36 or whatever Aranda is in right now. Like, it's just so hard to predict. So, you know, with guys like Manzardo and Meade coming up, I think the front office might want to be a little bit more careful before they think about, even parting with Demon Choi, like, you know what you're going to get with him, and who else, who can you trust? You know, it's going to be it's tough decisions, and I'm glad I don't have to make them, but it's fun to speculate on them. So yeah, that's pretty much it.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
Yeah, I mean, I think the front office and this offseason kind of undervalued proven major league commodities. You know, you look at specifically talking about Meadows and Wendell, and I'm not going to try to retcon like my own views on the Meadows trade. I was pretty happy about it. I was never the biggest Meadows fan, but then to like not like you went out and got David Peralta at the deadline, which is like, okay, how different, like, from an offensive profile is he from a Joey Wendell? And how, like, I guess he's probably a better defensive player than Austin Meadows, but he didn't hit a single home run in a Rays uniform. And it just felt like, oh, remember those two left-handed big league bats we traded in the offseason? Oh, yeah, we actually need to go out and get one in July again. Let's go get David Peralta. Again, I like David Peralta. I actually, you know, he did okay while he was with the Rays. He had .255, .317 on base. He pretty much did what he's been doing, you know, for the last couple of years of his career. And so I'm not, like, disappointed in the Peralta trade, but it feels like a trade that necessarily didn't have to be made if you, you know, approach the offseason a little differently. So we'll do a larger kind of breakdown of this season and the flaws of this Rays team in a traditional podcast format, but I do want to get to some of the listeners here. Let's bring Sebastian Alvarez on. Sebastian, you are live on the D-Rays Bay playoff podcast series. What's going on?
Hi, Dune. Yeah, I was hearing you guys on speculation on the offseason. Would there be – this might be a really heavy, risky take to make, but is there any speculations you guys would make on trading either Brandon Lau or Randy Rosarena?
That's a great question, Sebastian. I think the Rays will obviously take a look at everything this offseason. They do it every year. Brandon Lau is still on such a team-friendly contract. Like, when they locked him up after his first half season in the big leagues to a six-year deal, that was huge. And I don't think you'd have to get one hell of a return to entertain training Brandon Lau. Randy Rosarena, on the other hand, it wouldn't shock me. There's no real expectation that he's going to sign an extension here. He's a Boris client. I don't know if the Rays have ever signed a contract extension with any Boris client ever. When Blake Snell became a Boris client, he was shipped off like the next offseason. So it wouldn't shock me if the Rays take this opportunity to sell high on a guy like a Rosarena. Lau, though, I think, because again, we talked about, like, okay, who do you replace Brandon Lau with? Do you hope that Jonathan Aranda learns how to field a ground ball by spring training? I think the bat is good enough to be on a big league club, but Brandon Lau, like, I believe, is our best hitter. So, Ben, Brian, thoughts on a potential trade of a marquee player?
I think I'm the other way around from you, Brett. I think it's possible both get traded. I think it's possible neither get traded. But if I'm leaning towards one, I think Brandon Lau, I think, is more likely. The only reason I say that is because I believe a Rosarena has one more year before he's ARB1.
Yeah.
So there is
a chance he could be Super 2 and get it this offseason, I think.
That's a good point, and I did not consider that until right now when you told me that. But, yeah, I mean, Randy Rosarena, by and large, was the same player that he was last year. His base running antics cost him like an entire win above replacement. Like, I'm looking at his Fangraphs page right now. His this year and last year was pretty much identical. But last year was worth 3.8 wins, and this year he was worth 2.7 wins. And the majority of that, I think, comes a little bit from the defense, but I think that has mostly has to come from how many outs he made on the base pass. As far as like Brandon Lau, I think team-friendly deals for Rays players, I think make them just as likely to be traded as they are likely to be kept. But yeah, I think with how hurt he was and when he was on the field, the results weren't quite there. So I think he's going to be tough to trade too. But the thing with the Rays is that you just don't know what they're going to do.
Yeah, Brandon Lau scheduled to make $5.25 million next year, $8.7 million the following year. And then he has a club option in 2025. He would make $10.5 million. And then another club option in 2026 where he'd make $11.5 million if it's picked up. So I guess you get to the point where in Brandon Lau's age, 30 and 31 season, the Rays might not be in a position where they want to pay him $10.5, $11.5 million. So you really look at before that option, only 2 years left of this deal before you get into those last two seasons of it. I don't think I don't think you're going to get the offer that merits trading Brandon Lau. Maybe you don't get one for Randy Rosarena too, because talking about his base running, I don't think what he did this year is predictive of what he'll do in the future, because we saw him have a good base running season in 2021. And even though, yes, he made a lot of silly decisions this year, he's obviously got the athleticism at this point in his career to stretch, you know, singles into doubles, to steal bases, to, you know, find ways to score extra runs on top of what he does with the bat. So I don't know if, yeah, it cost him a win on Fangraphs this year, but I think that's not necessarily a predictive metric for what he's going to do in the future. Even if he's ARB one, it's like, what's he going to make? $3 million next year? I don't even know, because I can't imagine. I don't know the last time a player that's already won, you know, ALCS MVP, has had two 2020 seasons, who was rookie of the year going into their first year of arbitration. Like, I don't know what the comps are for that, so I have no clue how much he's going to make. He's definitely not going to live out his entire years of team control with the Rays unless he switches agents. Like, I just don't see an extension being signed. Ben, do you have a take on this?
A little bit on Brandon Lau. You know, he is on that really team-friendly deal, so that does, you know, make him probably somebody that a lot of teams would want. I mean, he has, I think I looked it up earlier, I'm pretty sure it was the ninth highest WRC plus of any second baseman ever, with at least 1,500 plate appearances. So, like, he's really good, got a ton of value, team-friendly deal. But kind of like Brian said, I think that makes him maybe just as equally likely to be traded, because, like, I don't know, the Rays do like to sell high, but if the price is right, like, if you get a really good package, and it would take a really good package to get Lau because of the deal and how productive and great he is, they could, if they can get a haul, that would be great. But I don't think they're going to trade him with the reasoning that, like, okay, we're just going to put Aranda at second base now because he's major league ready. Like, that's, we literally just saw that happen this offseason with, like, Meadows and J-Lo. So, I think Brandon Lau's probably going to stick around. I don't really see him going anywhere. Randy probably sticks around too, because, again, like, unless you can get, you know, an MLB-ready proven bat in return, I don't really see him going anywhere. I think we will have a big trade this offseason. I feel like we always get kind of like one trade that makes everybody do a double take. So we'll see. And maybe Randy's part of that. But yeah, I'm a little bit more pumped the brakes on trading MLB talent after this year.
Yeah. I agree. Let's get Michael Perchik on. Michael, thanks for joining us. You're live on the D-Rays Bay Playoff Podcast Series. You there, Michael? All right, we'll give him a second. Let's get Nate. Nate, welcome to the D-Rays Bay Playoff Podcast Series. What do you have for us?
Oh, me? Oh, hey, guys. I was just saying that regarding everything, I think it's almost a miracle that everything played out the way it was, considering just the vastness of their injury problems that plagued them this year. And I almost think that this offseason is a new way for them to reset and kind of just reschedule, like, or just reshuffle the way they want to build the roster, considering that Kiermaier's contract's off the books this year and Zunino's contract is coming off the books, or I'm pretty sure he's done. So I view this offseason as, yeah, it sucks with what happened with Cleveland, but they're in a position to where, like, where there's, like, this past offseason, they went out and chased Freddie Freeman, that this year they could really chase something that really impacts their roster and the major league level, whether that be someone like, you know, Sean Murphy in Oakland or something like that. But I'd view this as, like, they've been kind of, like, using this as, like, stepping stone years, whether it be last year with the young rotation. But, like, I feel like this coming off season is the off season where they can really take a swing on something to, like, push them forward and everything.
Yeah, I think that's a great point, Nate. Thanks for your comment. Yeah, I mean, I don't doubt that the Rays are going to chase top talent this off season. I do doubt that they're able to land it. Like, we've seen them go after these big moves. They were, you know, very close to getting Chris Bryant and Craig Kimbrell last year at the trade deadline. And last offseason, obviously, you know, came pretty close to getting Freddie Freeman, or so we thought. But what does it take to finally get across the finish line? Like, there are no prizes for second place in free agency. You either sign a player or you don't. So there's a big free agent class. There's going to be a lot of moving parts. Who knows? Maybe they go after Aaron Judge, right? But it wouldn't shock me to see them go after some guys that are going to be making at least, you know, $10 million a year next season and try to bring someone like that in. Maybe, I mean, Jose Abreu is getting older. He's going to be, like, I think, age 36 season next year, but that's more of a proven bat. And who knows? Evan Longoria is going to be a free agent. I don't think from the
bring him home. Bring Evan home.
That would be great, but I don't think from an on-the-field standpoint that really moves the needle and changes where, you know, we're at. But, I mean, yes, I think, and Nate mentioned it, the injuries, right? It was impressive that they got here. And I know they backed into the postseason, but you really didn't have Tyler Glass now this regular season. He only had two starts. You didn't have Brandon Lau for most of the season. When you did have him, he wasn't quite himself. Wander Franco played half the year. Shane Boz is now out for all of next year. We expected him to take a big jump up. And he had dealt with a lot of injuries in the bullpen, too. So I think if you're a fully healthy team, you make a better run of the division. You saw as late as early September, the Rays were making a push for that division, and then they kind of completely fell apart in the month of September. So, yeah, maybe next year, if you just stay healthy, you put yourself in a better position to just – win the division, or, you know, get one of those buys in the American League and not have to play this wild card round, but it still doesn't solve the problems that plagued this team offensively this year. So whether it be the free agent market or the trade market, I think the Rays have a lot of work to do. Do you want to keep some of these players that you can't count on day in, day out offensively and continue to rely on defensive pitching, which I've always defended the Rays for doing that, but I'm not saying these two games should be like the mea culpa for the Rays, that you know you had two really bad games offensively. You need to, you know, change everything. But over the season, like Brian said, it was a mediocre offense. I think they finished 99 WRC plus, so like right around average, which is good enough to make the playoffs if you've got elite pitching and defense. But the goal, I mean, my goal isn't to just make the playoffs. It's to win the World Series. So. Or at least that's my goal for the team. I don't know how the front office views it. I don't know how ownership views it. Maybe they don't mind just getting there every year. So,
yeah, I mean, so
go ahead, Brian.
Yeah, so about the offense real quick. I think there's a lot to be said about how this team got to where it was or to where it got to, considering all the injuries. I would argue, though, that if you look at this lineup for the last two games, I mean, minus Brandon Lau, this is really the group of guys that the Rays brought in to play, you know, this season where they're going to the playoffs with. I mean, like, we had Paredes, we had Ramirez, we had Diaz, we had a Rosarena, Choi was in there, Jose Siri was in center field, we had Manuel Margot back, so... I know maybe these guys were still a little bit banged up, and all these guys missed significant time, like, throughout the year, except for Rosarena and Diaz. But, like, these last two games and this last, like, you know, 2 weeks of September, like, we went into the playoffs with the group of guys that we wanted to have. You know, like I said, Midas Brandon Lau, he was the only one. So, yeah, I mean, there's – and I feel like the more significant injuries were definitely on the pitching side, and you know the way that we were able to just churn guys in and out was really remarkable. So yeah, I mean, like I think there's a lot to say about how the team battled through injuries and progressed and got to the postseason considering everything that happened. But I would still say that that doesn't mean that it doesn't absolve the front office from there's still some accountability to be had here, is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, I agree. I don't think you can just keep saying, you know, it'll get better next year. Like the Rays are close. Like the Rays do have a good team, but the goal isn't to have a good team; it's to have a great team. And when you have, you know, you had four straight years with 90 wins. This year, you only win 86, but you go back to the postseason. The expectation should continue to stay where, okay, we want to get back to the World Series and we want to win one. That's going to happen every year. That's unrealistic, but I don't think anyone was confident that the Rays were going to go on a deep postseason run. You think, okay, we get past Cleveland. I kind of liked how we would have matched up against New York and then see what you could do against the Astros, but it probably wasn't going to look good. And then test your chances against whoever it is that comes out of the National League, because you've got the Dodgers looming over there, the Braves, the Mets, the Padres, the Cardinals, a lot of really good teams. So I don't think anyone was – it's not like last year where the expectation, I think, by a lot of Rays fans was to win the World Series. But, yeah, it's just disappointing how not even these two games went, but the month of September went. And I know it felt like a lot of it was, okay, let's just stay healthy. There was no sense of urgency. There was no sense to try to gain any momentum. Pete Fairbanks and Jason Adam hadn't pitched at all in a week and a half, and Fairbanks gets hurt as soon as he goes out there. And Jason Adam, although he settled in and did really, really well, his first pitch was right into the back of Oscar Gonzalez. So those two guys coming in cold for their first postseason appearance just didn't feel like a great idea. And so, yeah, I don't know. I'm a little frustrated. Ben, you unmute yourself for a second. Do you have something to add? Ben might have stepped away for a second. Let's try to get Michael back on if he is requested again. Michael, let's see if we can get you connected this time. What you got for us?
Y'all hear me now?
Yes.
All right. So, I mean, I think everything kind of broke right last year. You had Wander come up and, you know, outside the first couple of weeks was really, really good. Randy was obviously great. Really take out the Glasnow injury. You had Lau had a great year as a Nino, had far and away his best year as a Ray. You had guys in the bullpen step up. This year felt like everything that could go wrong went wrong. It was a lot more of a Murphy's Law. The bullpen was banged up the entire year. I could be mistaken. I think every starting pitcher, maybe besides Kluber, was on the IL at some point outside Yandy and Randy. Every hitter was banged up. I think the front office may have read into that a little bit, the trade deadline not being more aggressive going out and trying to get an impact bat. Peralta was a fine pickup. I'd make the trade again, even though he was largely a non-factor. But I think they kind of may look the writing on the wall. They were hoping some of these injuries would dissipate. You'd get Harold and Margot back. But losing Lau, I think, was kind of the final straw. Ultimately, heading the next year, and you guys have touched on it, too much reliance on young players just can't happen again. I mean, Lau, Walls, Bruhan, largely non-factors offensively. I know Walls has a good glove, but you know, even some metrics don't love his glove as much as I know a lot of fans do. Paredes was, you know, a really nice pickup. It was a bit of a feast and famine with him. I think Aranda's going to be better next year, but I don't know where you put him defensively. I do wonder, though, if they made a move maybe for Christian Walker. You know, they obviously were speaking with Arizona. But a guy like that, power bat, really good defensive first baseman. I think it was a 5-plus war this year on a team in a really tough division. He's 31, has a couple more years of arbitration. But that, to me, would have been a pickup that I think maybe puts this offense over the top. A legitimate difference maker. And I can't imagine the price is going to be super high in a guy like that with Arizona looking to rebuild. I don't know. The other thing I'd ask, with the midseason acquisitions, we saw last year with Cruz, we saw this year with Peralta, guys adjusting to playing at the drop. We know that is not an easy park to play in for hitters. Some guys just don't pick up the ball well. Adames had really noticeable home-away splits, and he's taken off as a hitter in Milwaukee. Some of it may be mental, but it does seem there's been a number of players who just don't hit all that well at the drop. I wonder if that's going to factor into decision-making for some of these big bat pickups, if you're going to be giving up top prospects for half a season, if these guys don't have a lot of time to adjust.
Michael, I think you made a lot of great points there. Thank you for coming on and giving us some of your time. Yeah, I think you look at last year and a lot did go right. And you don't really have a 100-win season unless you're the Dodgers. Not many teams are good enough to win 100 games, right? You want to get to around a 95-win quality team, and then things go your way, and you win 100. The Dodgers, I think, are in a different stratosphere. And the Rays won exactly 100 last year, but you had career years from, like Michael said, Brandon Lau, Mike Zunino. To expect that again this year, and even if they were healthy, was probably a little short-sighted. The reliance on young talent. And this is a good team this year too. Things broke poorly, and you go from 90 plus wins down to 86. And so I don't know. Obviously, clearly this team was worse than last year's team, but it wasn't like miles worse, right? I think they were a decent team. They're a good enough team to make the postseason. I know, speaking on Christian Walker, I know there was some interest there with Arizona and discussion. I know the Rays were going after right-handed bats. I don't know how far anything got, but it wouldn't shock me to see them pursue him again. At this point, he seems like, yeah, a bat where maybe you will have to pay up because he had such a good season at the plate, but he's a gettable guy, right? Maybe probably more gettable than some of the big fish that you've chased in the past. And age 31, you imagine as a first baseman, he's still got a few years left of good offensive production. And it would make sense to go out and get a guy like that. And like we've talked about, a proven major league player. You're not banking on him. You're not, gambling. This isn't a long-term investment. It's let's bring a guy in that can hit. And he's a first baseman, so you're not taking that hit that you would on defense, right? We talk about Jonathan Aranda. Yeah, Michael, where do we put him? I got no clue. Maybe if G-Man Choi leaves this offseason, you work out Aranda at first base and see if that works out. I don't really love having a guy that's just a DH on the roster. I think that's a terrible use of a roster spot, but it wouldn't shock me if that's where Aranda gets most of his plate appearances. But if he could play first or maybe figure out something at second or right field or wherever, maybe you do need to take the hit defensively just to produce some more runs. Not to go crazy, not to overhaul everything, but to be that reliant on pitching and defense, yeah, it was great. Our pitching and defense was great in the postseason, right? You held them to just 3 runs in 24 innings. You were lights out. But you only scored 1. So disappointing. I want to get a couple more people on here. Kevin Cash, Burner, you're live on our Twitter spaces. What's up? Are you there, Kevin Cash's Burner?
Yeah, sorry. Just fletched out. Doing? I just want to know if you guys have any idea about the Rays' developmental methods with their hitters, because it seemed like outside of Wander, who was already a really great hitter from a young age, our hitters that have our prospects that have grown up and joined the major leagues have not been hitting well. So do you guys know, like, if the Rays do anything differently than other organizations regarding like minor league hitting philosophy and how that might not transfer well into the major leagues?
That is a great question, and thanks for coming on today. But I Ben, Brian, I don't know if you guys have something on this. I really don't know. I know, yeah, I think that's a great point that their homegrown guys really haven't developed, and it's been a while since we had one come up other than Wander Franco, who was kind of a phenomenon, right? So, Ben, you might be able to add a little bit more to this.
I know a little bit about that side of things. And, I mean, first of all, rookies and young players really aren't that good, and it's been a while since they've really invested heavily, I think, in the draft and in hitters. Like, they've usually been pretty pitcher heavy. In recent years, they went out and got Manzardo in the second round. Mead is still working his way up, so they have guys that are cooking in the minors right now, but it's not like they went out and signed Bruhan for his bat or anything like that. He was what, like a $15,000 signee from wherever. Like he wasn't like a highly touted guy. Like they don't, Taylor Walls even, like he wasn't drafted for his hit tool in what, the third round, I think, from FSU. Like he was drafted for his glove and for his, you know, plate discipline, but it, his hit tool is showing, like, you know, it's not great. So it's pretty hard to, you know, completely reinvent yourself once you join an organization. Josh Lowe has gotten better, but I mean, again, they drafted him as like a speedy defensive center field outfield guy. So I think they will get some young guys that come up and hit better in the near future, because they do have a lot of, you know, high end prospects down there, and they consistently have good farm systems. But for a long time, they were, you know, pretty focused on pitching, and they tried to like double dip with Brendan McKay, and we saw how that worked. So I think they're just going to maybe, I don't think they do anything differently developmentally, basically, is what I'm saying. I think it's just an emphasis. And we're going to see how it works out in the future with all the middle infield athlete guys that they got. Because I know Carson Williams is one that can definitely hit, but he's like, you know, 4 or 5 years away.
So I think there has been a slight change in the scout, from a scouting standpoint. Like you mentioned, Manzardo, Xavier Isaac, their first round draft pick, which I thought was a pretty bad pick, if I'm being honest. But the guy, you know, they're hoping, they think he can really hit. Heriberto Hernandez put up another really good season at high A this year. He's going to his age 23 season next year. Imagine he'll be at double A to start the year. Guys that they don't really have a position yet, but you're banking on the bat. I haven't checked to see how Xavier Isaac did in the complex league this year. It looks like he only had 21 plate appearances, so I won't draw any conclusions from that. But there has been at least a slight shift. You still got your glove first guys all throughout the system. That I think the Rays really like, but they're at least trying to bring hitters. Because, I mean, the last homegrown, besides Wander Franco, the last homegrown hitter that's come up and proven himself is Brandon Lau, really, unless I'm forgetting someone. But it's hard to project who's going to come up at the big league level when you sign a guy at 16 or you draft a guy at 18 or 21 and figure out who's going to be able to hit in the big leagues. And so maybe the Rays' approach has just been, let's go out and get guys who we've seen taste of at the big league level, right? You got Yandy Diaz after he had a couple underwhelming seasons in Cleveland. You got Paredes after he had a terrible start to his big league career in Detroit. But the Rays saw something that they could just tweak a little bit. And Yandy Diaz is, you know, they mentioned another broadcast today, one of six qualified hitters in the big leagues with a 400 OBP. And the other five guys are either – surefire first ballot Hall of Famers that are on that trajectory. It's hard to develop to big league hitters. Brian, anything to add on that one and how the Rays kind of approach things offensively?
I mean, I can't really speak to the draft or like how they've been developing guys in the minor leagues. It's just because I don't follow that as much and it's not really my forte. But I would say that, like, if you look at the trades that the Rays have been making, especially for like younger hitters, I think Jose Siri might be the only exception here because there's a lot of swing and miss in his game. But I think like Yandy Diaz, Manuel Margot, and even like Paredes and Ramirez to an extent, they're like low strikeout, high bat to ball guys that maybe the Rays are just trying to figure out how they can get a little bit more out of. I think Yandy Diaz is like low key, like a borderline star just because of how much he can walk. I wrote for Baseball Prospectus. I did the preview for game one. And I wrote that Yandy Diaz has walk to strikeout ratioed his way into being like one of the best third basemen in baseball. I think that they're trying to hopefully get those other guys on a track. Maybe not quite to be like Yandy Diaz, but like, can they control the zone a little bit more? Can they kind of look for the pitches that they can produce optimal outcomes on, things like that? So that's kind of what I see as far as like the guys that they're bringing in. I know a lot less about what they're doing developmentally in the minor leagues or what they're drafting, but that's kind of the trend I see when they trade for these younger guys.
Yeah, definitely. I've got three more people in the queue. Let's go to Jacob Statman. Jacob, you're live. What's going on? Can you hear us, Jacob? All right, we'll give him a second. Let's get to Emmanuel. Emmanuel, what you got for us? All right. Oh, yeah. Maybe here comes Jacob. Jacob, what's up?
Sorry, can you guys hear me?
Here's Emmanuel. All right, Emmanuel, what you got?
All right, cool. What's up, guys? There's obviously a lot to unpack, you know, but long story short, I have no idea at this point. You know, I'm with you guys on, you know, focusing on the future and seeing what the developmental team brings us in the up and coming years and in this offseason. But as far as analyzing this game right now, and not just this game, but even to yesterday, just like you guys were saying, you know, like the exception being Jose Siri, that's the one that strikes out the most and whatnot. But he's great defensively. He's the one that put up the only run in this whole series. Hell, let alone even the only hit in this whole series. That mattered, at least. So it's kind of ironic. And, you know, it's daunting to think about that the least person that you think to do the damage is the person that does the damage. And I think on a lot of areas, like you guys were saying, Yandy Diaz is arguably one of the best third basemen in baseball right now, as far as, you know, strikeout to chase and walk ratios. But does it transfer over to the postseason? We saw that in the World Series run with Brandon Lau, right? Brandon Lau was huge for us that whole year. But in the postseason, it was kind of crazy to see that his bat wasn't working the same way that it did in the regular season. And instead, Randy Arozarena was the one guy that stepped up, and he's the one that put up all those at-bats. And Austin Meadows had those at-bats, those lengthy at-bats that helped us win as well. So it's kind of ironic to me that with this team, it's the people that you expected the least to make the most damage. And when you need people to step up, like Wander Franco, Arozarena, Yandy Diaz, Harold Ramirez, you know, obviously we don't got Zunino, we don't have Lau. in those areas, they don't. And is there a problem in that? Is it the hitting coach? Is it because at this point, Yandy is probably the only one that has played discipline as far as today's and yesterday's game went. I don't know if you guys saw how many 0-4s there were, but there was a lot of 0-4s. A lot of 0-4s, 0-3s, and it was, everybody was getting trigger happy, like if we were winning 9-0. And to me, it was just insane. It was insane to me because, you know, like a pitcher like Shane Bieber, you know he's going down in the win, and he still keeps going. You know Tristan McKenzie, from your two previous at-bats, he's been striking you out on the top with a fastball, and you're still going for that. So the only person that seems to have played discipline here is Yandy Diaz. So it seems like a solely responsible thing that he's taken upon himself to, you know, teach himself, better himself. But as far as everybody else, I got no clue who's putting in overtime at BP, in the personal time, wherever. I have no clue. But I just think it's, you know, what if the developmental process is so amazing, kind of like it was with Wander Franco, you know, amazing guy, kid, even, he's barely 21. But what if even all of those kids that we get, like Jonathan Aranda and Josh Lau, Vidal Brujan, all of those guys, if they are down with the same, you know, premise of this hitting coach, which is my theory, because why else would you not have played discipline? It doesn't matter who we get, because at the end of the day, whoever's teaching you, if they're teaching you the way that they've been teaching the prior people, are we really going to go that far? So that's my conspiracy theory.
Yeah, no, I think you bring up a lot of great points, Emmanuel, and thanks for joining us today. What I'll say, Yandy, like last year, expectations were a lot higher. You had four really tough games. This year, even though it was only two games, it just felt like they had no chance of getting a hit. it was hard to get excited when you got out of a jam or got three big outs, and especially as we got later in the game. So there was just no confidence that even anybody would run into one. And after your changes, you went Vidal Brujan, Taylor Walls, Manuel Margot, Francisco Mejia. Like, after you got through those first four hitters, not a guy had any confidence in Harold Ramirez this series either. There was nobody. And again, part of that's injuries. No Brandon Lau, no Mike Zunino. The lineup wasn't stretched, but you started the game with Troy Paredes, Margot, and Bethancourt. I know those changes were made. I'm not questioning those changes except for the Taylor Walls when I thought Brujan running for Troy was a good move. I think last year was more of an anomaly. This year's team was never really built to hit. And not even in the postseason, but they weren't really hitting that well in the regular season. If the goal was to be league average, then yeah, mission accomplished. But that should not be the goal, not for a team that has aspirations like the Rays should have. Brian, Ben, anything to add?
Just to touch on that, I mean, we can't really say like, oh, all these guys can't hit in the postseason after they played. I mean, granted, it was two long games, but it was like two games. It's an extremely small sample size, and they're independent from year to year. So, you know, I'm not going to talk too much about Brandon Lau's stuff because that is like a mental thing at some point. Like, there's definitely like a point where it's, you know, it's not just bad luck or whatever. It's mental for sure. But it's just really unfortunate. Like Brett said, it was a league average offense. They had a 99 or 100 WRC plus like the whole season. They went out and laid an egg twice in two postseason games. The Guardians offense looked just as bad. They just happened to have a ground ball single ahead of one of their home runs, and that ended up making a pretty big difference. So, I mean, a lot of people like to praise the Guardians. They have the fun, contact-heavy offense, but you know, you look at what they've been doing, and this is by design from two games in a row from the Guardians, where like they're putting the ball in play, but against good pitching staffs and good defense, like we saw with the Rays this series, like it doesn't, you know, it's not that great. But if you're playing the White Sox, the Tigers, and the Royals for 50 games, like, yeah, maybe it's going to look a bit better. So I don't really think it's like a problem with the Rays approach or individual players necessarily. I mean, their offense just wasn't great this year. And they, you know, obviously didn't make adjustments today like we saw, but it's two games. Eventually this stuff would even out in the long run. I think the Rays would be better in a 7-game series, but you don't get a 7-game series in the wild card round. So it's unfortunate. Kind of hoped Randy would do something, because of what he did last year, but we know now that, or we've known that, you know, the production from postseason, it varies a lot, and it doesn't, just because you do well one postseason doesn't mean you're going to do well the next one. So it's pretty random, small series, unfortunate, and that's how I'm going to cope with it.
Yeah, so by weighted on base, I looked this up a few days ago, the Rays and Guardians were the two worst offenses in the entire playoff field. And I think to go back to the points that Emmanuel was making, we did talk about like at the top of the podcast or the space here that the lack of approach was heavily exploited by the Guardians pitching. But I will say that though, that like for at least the major league development, I would say that, I mean, yeah, it hasn't translated into the playoffs, and you know, to Ben's point, that's not really predictive of anything, but in the regular season at least, like, yeah, the offense as a whole took a step back, but if you think about like the guys that we've, you know, brought in, you know, Manuel Margot wasn't really close to a league average hitter, now he's at least a little bit closer to a league average hitter. You know, Yandy Diaz is what he is now. These guys like Paredes had a 116 WRC plus this year. Harold Ramirez 120. These were guys that were brought in with very, very limited major league samples and were, you know, above average, contributors for an entire season on a playoff team. So I don't think we can say that like the major league approach is not working. I don't think we should absolve the hitting coaching staff of all accountability either. But yeah, I mean, I just think that there is a case to be made that like we maybe were relying on these guys to take too many important bats too soon, and that kind of reared its ugly head here in these last two games. But yeah, I mean, I'm not sure if I'm on board with the idea that the entire hitting approach at the major league level needs to change. That might be a hot take, but
I think that's fair. I think that's fair, and I'm sure all of our viewpoints will kind of change as we get further removed from this series, which was obviously disappointing. I want to try to get back to Jacob Statman. We couldn't connect with him earlier. But Jacob, you're back.
Can you hear me?
Yep.
I think definitely hats off to the pitching staff. Glasnow come back, throw 5 shutout innings was huge. Shane McClanahan, like that guy, you have to priority one, extend him this offseason. Having McClanahan and Glasnow, it's a two-headed monster. It's only going to be success for at least the next 2 years. We have Glasnow on contract. I think the offense, it was awful, but I think it's going to figure itself out. The scariest part, I think, this year was that, like, it was always one person carrying the offense, whereas last year when they won 100 games, it was more of like everybody was picking each other up. And we saw throughout the year that one guy was hot and just one guy wasn't hot at the end of the year. I think a big spot to fill the void is probably first base. I don't know what the answer is, whether it's Kyle Manzardo. I think G-Man's time with the Rays is probably coming to an end. He's a great – love G-Man, but I think that's a big spot. And maybe picking up another outfield left-handed bat, whether that be Jock Peterson, be it more of a one-year deal, Rays typical deal, or trade for somebody unknown and then keep doing the thing with the bullpen, finding these no-name guys and making them into absolute studs.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Jacob, I mean, thank you for coming on. And you make an absolutely great point. Leaving this weekend, if you can be positive about anything, and it's hard, I know it, but this pitching staff going into next year, Glasnow on that extension where you don't really have to worry about him being traded this offseason. I know anything can happen, but it would be really out of character for this team to sign him to an offseason last month and then deal him. A healthy Shane McClanahan. You are without Shane Boz, but you do have Drew Rasmussen, Jeffrey Springs. I doubt Corey Kluber comes back, but you never know. You've got Yadi Chirinos, a couple other young guys. Maybe Taj Bradley gets closer to making his debut. The bullpen looks great as ever. I mean, I'm really excited about Glasnow looking as good as he did. Pete Fairbanks looking as good as he did when he came back from injury. We'll see what was up with him now. But Brian, I know you're the pitching guy. I mean, how excited are you about the staff moving forward?
Yeah, I want to talk a second about Tyler Glasnow and how, like, I think it can't be overstated how good he looked today in his third start coming back from Tommy John surgery. Like, if you think about pitchers, like Rays pitchers historically, especially starters who have come back from Tommy John surgery, it's taken them a while to kind of really get their footing and even, like, look like, you know, half of their old selves. If you think about, like, Matt Moore was never really the same. Alex Cobb, it took about half a season. Like, he wasn't good until, like, the following season. So for Tyler Glasnow to, you know, miss a significant amount of time, I know he got, like, the internal brace thing or whatever that was. But for him to come back in his third start in a playoff game, an elimination game at that, I mean, even a healthy Tyler Glasnow probably isn't going much longer than 5 innings. But for him to do what he did today, I mean, it can't be overstated how just dominant he was. As far as the rest of the pitching staff, I think Shane McClanahan, as great as he was in the first half and even how great as he was in game one, I think he has a little bit of work to do this offseason. The second half, he wasn't really the same pitcher. I wrote about him on Baseball Prospectus about how his release point relative to his pitch shapes make him so unique. And I won't get too into the weeds there, but in the second half, he kind of lost his release point a little bit. So that's why he wasn't striking out as many guys. His pitch shapes were a little bit different because of it. And I think that could be just be because, you know, he spent some time in the injury list too, the shoulder impingement. I think a lot of that had to do like with it just being a long season, and his body probably just couldn't keep doing the things that it was doing in the first half. So hopefully he can kind of figure that out and reset and come back into next season and be as good as he was this season. Jeffrey Springs, not really much I can say there. He's just been absolutely wonderful. I loved the trade when they acquired him. I knew exactly what was going to make him good. I never expected him to become a starter and still be as good. But yeah, there was a lot to like about Jeffrey Springs. And then Drew Rasmussen, man, he's been really good too. I still can't quite figure him out. He's kind of an enigma for me just because the stuff doesn't match like the peripherals for me, but when the results are there, the results are there, and I'm not going to question it. And yeah, to your point, Fairbanks, Jason Adam, you know, Jason Beeks, whenever he was healthy, he was really good. Garrett Clevenger, I hope he's on the team next year. My hot take, I said this in the Slack, Brett, but I'll say it publicly. I think if Sean Armstrong is on the team next year, he becomes a starter. I really like what he's done. He's shown that he can pitch multiple innings. He has started a few times. One of the times, of course, was out of necessity. But I really like what I've seen from Sean Armstrong, not just today, but over the whole season. He's been a lot better than his 4.30 ERA.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. We'll see about the starter take, but hey, I mean, Drew Rasmussen, Jeffrey Springs, it worked for both of them. I don't think the Rays are going to stop trying to take guys that they believe in and trying to stretch them out a little bit longer and really continue to blur the lines between what a starter and what a reliever is. We've got two more people in the queue. I want to get to you guys real quick before we wrap this up. I know it's gone on because we will do a podcast where we kind of break down the season into some more detail, but we've had a lot of great discussion today. Let's get to Brett Schaefer. Brett, what's going on?
Hi, yeah.
You there, yep. Brett?
Yeah, I just wanted to talk about Yonder's base running blunder there. I just thought that was a really key play, and I don't understand why, first of all, we didn't steal him before that. I was dumbfounded there because we can't, you know, get back-to-back-to-back singles all day. So why don't we take a risk and, you know, try to steal them there? And then, you know, it's a little nubber to second. And there's no reason for him to really, like, freeze and go back to first base. Like, all he has to do is just freeze and stop and make him run up to him and tag him. Maybe he gets on the ground and then makes the tag harder. There's no way, you know, worst-case scenario – you know, they tag Wander there and, you know, we're safe at first base. But for him to stop and then go back and then get doubled back up at second was just a huge base running mistake. And that's just something that surprised me because, you know, Wander's like, you know, supposed to be our phenom. He's supposed to be the guy that makes all the big plays and instincts should be top notch. And to me, that was just kind of a huge blunder. I don't know if you guys saw it the same way.
I do agree with you, Brett, to an extent there. I like the decision to stop and even to go back a step or two to make Jimenez really think about what he wants to do in that situation. From what I saw, and there wasn't a super clear camera angle, is that when that throw was made and Jimenez committed to just getting the out at first, Wander either didn't take off to second right away, like it was like a mental gap or something, or he just wasn't fast enough. Whether that be because he's still dealing with some stuff with his legs. He had two leg injuries this year. Maybe he doesn't have that ability to turn quickly. I think as Rays fans, there is a reason. And as the Rays, like, organizationally, there's a reason to be concerned with Wander's health. The hamate bone, not so much. Like that'll heal. That'll get better. But the leg injuries he had this year, the concerns about him playing on turf, well, and unless the Rays get a new outdoor stadium, he's going to be, you know, have to play half of his games on turf. For the length of this contract. So yeah, I like the decision. Like, I think it was a great move to stop and try to force Jimenez to do something. But yeah, I wasn't exactly sure how you can still get doubled up there because at the end of the day, he really didn't do anything. You know, it would have been a double play either way. So it was frustrating, but there was a lot of frustrating things. Like, I don't want to put it too much on Wander, but yeah, I think a number of key things where Margot beats out that double, or not double play, but that great play that Ramirez made down the third baseline to throw him out, and Josh Naylor with the pick. It felt like Margot should have been safe there. It felt like Wander should have been safe at second. And ultimately, yeah, we just didn't string together hits, and it or really get any extra base hits. I liked Rex Oliver and Al Brujan on the bases at the plate today, but everybody else really struggled. Let's get to Bill real quick. And once again, thanks, Brad. That was a great point to bring up, and we kind of break down that play a little bit more. But let's add Bill. Bill, what's going on? You're our last caller here on the D-Rays Bay Playoff Podcast Series. What you got for us?
Hey, how's it going? Thank you so much for letting me come on here. Yeah, I'm a huge Rays fan. I've been watching since 08, but this one really stung. 2020, the team was, you know, we didn't really have much respect. They really wanted to go after it. You know, we almost did it. 2021 came back, had Wander Franco. He was a monster. This year, it seemed, since that one series with the Yankees, and I'll go back to September 9th, that series, we were 1.5 games away from taking, I mean, we were right on the heels of the Yankees. And then after that, 10 days later, Yandy Diaz and who was Rosarena had their little scuffle. And since then, everybody's been kind of banged up. They've kind of been just not really on it. We get to this series and there was just no energy, through the whole team. You could see it today. It was just sad to see. I think we're going to be fine over the next couple of years. Definitely need to get a first baseman. We don't have that. But overall, I think the team's fine. Like, our pitching, I mean, we have studs out there. And you look at the last five World Series. I mean, look, Atlanta won. They had almost all of our players. You look at before that, you're looking at all the Astros. They have all of our management. You look at, I mean, every single team. The Dodgers, who won in 2020, have our management. So, like, the Rays way is slowly making it through baseball. I think once we get a new owner, hopefully, if that even happens, and just inject a little bit of money, we could literally win every year, because our way is the way of baseball. We'll be back next year. But, yeah, I just think that there were some scuffles in the clubhouse, and everybody was kind of hurt. And I just kind of want to get your opinion on that.
Bill, I think you bring up a lot of great points. Thank you for chiming in there. The ownership, I don't think there's going to be a change there anytime soon. I would like to see a little bit more investment where, you know, maybe we do what it takes to get a Freeman if we were that close. Like, the Rays are known for having very hard valuations of players, sticking to it. But I would like to see us, it's got to be the right player, and Freddie Freeman would have been the right decision. I mean, he's, you know, an MVP candidate in the National League, you know, just doing whatever it takes. Maybe he never intended to sign with the Rays. Maybe he was always Dodgers or Braves, and the Rays were in there to drive the price up. That's something the Rays need to evaluate too. Like, if we're going to go in for these players, we really need to go in for these players. But I agree that I'm not worried about this team missing the postseason next year, especially in the expanded field. But I do think there does need to be a couple of changes. But yeah, thanks, Bill. And, thank you to everybody who's chimed in. Brian, Ben, anything you guys want to add, close the show out with?
I'm all good. This was fun.
It was a lot of fun. Well, the game wasn't fun, awesome. But it's good to kind of decompress for a little bit.
Right. That's what I meant.
And Ben, what you got, man?
Yeah, no, this is fun. I totally, honestly didn't know you were doing this, so it was cool. Thanks for letting me come on and just say words and stuff. Yeah, this team's looking great. I think, you know, the next couple of years are going to be fun. Just get into the postseason and see what can happen every year. I think that's what they're aiming for. And 4 years in a row now, they've been successful at it. So maybe next year is the year where they win it all.
Yeah, well, thanks, Ben. Yeah, I saw you in there when you popped in. I was like, all right, I'm going to try to rope him into this. And I think we've been going for maybe over an hour now. I don't know. I've kind of lost track of time.
It's all good. You.
That's going to do it for our D-Rays Bay Playoff Podcast Series. This is, you know, our last instant reaction episode of the year. We'll probably do one more kind of recap, or that might be a raise your voice where we take a look ahead to the offseason and what should be another busy offseason. There's a roster crunch, a lot of guys that need to be added to the 40-man, and probably going to be some departures at the big league level from guys that have been here for a few years now. So thank you to everybody who tuned in. Thank you to those of you that joined and kind of gave your insight or threw in a question. I really like these Twitter spaces. We had a goal to do these more during the regular season. We did one on opening day. Maybe we'll bring that back next year, but I think this is a really good format for our playoff podcast here. Hopefully the Rays will get back for a fifth straight season next year, and we can do it all over again, but hopefully for a little bit longer. So if you missed any of this conversation, you want to go back and listen to it, it will be available as a podcast on the D-Rays Bay Podcast Network. As always, head on over to draysbay.com. There's going to be a ton of great off-season coverage. Sometimes that's when we do our best work, looking at how –